One of the things that I have been, when I read the newspapers, one of the topic areas that we often have been hearing is, should we be doing switchgrass production? Should we be doing corn production? Should we be doing soybean production? If you look back in the last National Geographic, the front page was dealing with ethanol from some of our different sources of biofuels. The hypothesis behind the paper is, I believe, is that perhaps we ought to be doing one type of production versus another type of production. And I really don't think that's what we heard this morning from our three earlier speakers. I thought what we heard was, we really do need to change the question from monocropping of corn, soybeans, wheat, whatever, grasses, to some sort of agricultural system that incorporates the different pieces and then places the individual commodities at locations where they're going to be most productive or most profitable. Some of the programs that Nebraska has put together, the program that looks at the energy balance questions, I think are very, very useful. And I think they're critical from a scientific point of view that we be answering those sorts of questions. If I do this, what's this going to do to the energy efficiency of my system? How about if I do that? What's that going to do to the energy efficiency of my system? Now, when I give my producer talks, and we go out and we give seminars and things like that to our producers, and I start talking about the energy efficiency of the system, they think that's very interesting, but then they ask me, well, what about the economics? Am I going to make money if I grow switchgrass? Am I going to make money if I grow grass? And so what Greg Carlson did is he said, okay, I'll try to answer that question for you and what the talk that he's in, what I put together and I'm going to be presenting. First off, I'm a poor replacement for Greg Carlson. He's the guy who put this talk together. He's done most of the calculations dealing with the economic calculations, and I'll try to relay them as best I possibly can. I'm a soil biochemist. I'm not an economist. When we start looking at what people have been presenting, and we look at the Tillman paper that came out of Minnesota, and we look at a variety of different sorts of papers, we're oftentimes comparing apples with oranges, and we need to be thinking in the sense that we need to move from comparing apples with oranges with apples with apples. We oftentimes look at systems where we say, well, we don't need to put any nitrogen fertilizer in this system, and therefore it's going to be so much more energy efficient than this other system. When we start looking at the nitrogen response data from most of our crops, we see that most of our crops respond to nitrogen. Therefore, it's likely that producers will know that these crops respond to nitrogen, and it's therefore it's additionally likely that they will try to take advantage of that nitrogen to increase their productivity and profitability. When we compare the corn numbers with, let's say, switchgrass values for productivity of energy, we oftentimes only consider the energy contained in the grain, and we don't consider the energy contained in the stover material. Yet, when we look at the switchgrass and the grains, we look at the energy contained in the total above ground biomass, and we say, well, look how much more productive this is from this, and therefore we ought to be doing this. In South Dakota, and the discussion that I'm going to present is really coming from a South Dakota perspective, and I think it relates pretty well to the northern Great Plains area. We have areas in our fields where we have high, very, very productive areas in our fields. We have other areas in our fields that are not so productive and might do better with one type of crop versus another type of crop. For example, in our foot slope areas, one particular type of grass might work best. In our back slope areas, corn might be best, and as we move into some of our summit shoulder areas, switchgrass might grow best. And so we need to think in the sense of this agricultural intensification, not just in the sense of that we need to increase our productivity of the sites, but perhaps we need to really think in the sense of how do we increase the diversity in order to increase the productivity of our sites. Let's see if I can go forward. Okay. What Greg did is he teaches a class at SDSU, and he teaches a class PS440, and it's precision farming. And what he asks every student that comes into this class, and typically he has about 30 or 40 of them a semester, he asks every one of them, what's their cost of production? When they start, most of our kids come from the farm, and when they start that discussion, they say, we have no idea. I mean, we've got some of them down here. But most of them have very little idea about what their cost of production is. But when they get done, hopefully they can calculate these particular values. We can start at the top, and when we look at this for us, we see one of our biggest costs that we have are seeds. And typically we'll pay somewhere around $150 a bag, which contains about 80,000 seeds. Planted at 30,000 seeds per acre, it's going to give us some costs between $50 and $60 per acre. A lot of our fields require fertilizer, and what we've got calculated here that most of our students will apply is around 120 pounds of fertilizer and somewhere between 40 and 50 pounds of P205 for a cost of somewhere around $58 per acre. We have a rental cost of around $80. We also have other costs in there like labor. Well, it's nice to get paid. Crop consulting, crop insurance, machinery cost, and fuel and labor. And so when we add up all these different costs, we can come up with a total cost per acre, you know, somewhere around $290 per acre in costs that the farmers have before they get any particular return. One of the biggest advantages for our farmers, this whole thing of ethanol, we've talked in the sense that ethanol has increased the price of corn. But for them, this price of corn is critical because I think it adds to their self-worth. All of a sudden, as opposed to, let's say, requiring on a government subsidy to make their farm operation work, they're now able to, let's see if I can, they're now able to produce somewhere around $360 per acre if they're producing 120 bushel corn for a total value of $360. We subtract their inputs and we have something that a lot of our farmers haven't seen before, which is a profit without relying on government subsidies. The second part of that equation is dealing with, well, what's likely to happen with the corn stover? Again, what I said is we need to think about this in the sense that we should be thinking with apples, not apples with oranges. If we're talking about harvesting all the above ground biomass with switchgrass, or if we're talking about that with natural prairies, then we need to be thinking about the same sorts of things with our corn production. If we're able to have a net crop of a net worth of about $60 a ton for the corn stover, we subtract some of our input costs, perhaps harvesting and fertilizer costs, you know, the fertilizer that's removed with that corn stover, we could then say, well, let's put a profit margin of $30 per acre. We would then estimate that our stover would add to our profit of around $85 with a net field profit of about $160 per acre. And so our profit is a function of both the grain directly as well as some profit coming from the stover. So that's one thing. And our farmers understand these values pretty well, okay? Some of them understand these values pretty well. Some of them, not so well. The questions that many of them don't understand very well is what's likely to happen if they would convert a portion of their fields into switchgrass. What we heard earlier today was, well, here's some of the benefits of using a switchgrass. We talked about some of the benefits of the increased diversity. Well, there's also going to be some costs associated with that to a farmer. And let's say that he's going to put some seed out there and he's going to say, let's put it in a switchgrass field for 10 years. We can depreciate that cost of that seed over that 10-year period of about $10. Some annual herbicides, we're going to put some fertilizer out there at a cost of around $53. We still have some land rental. We still have labor, insurance, machinery, lubricant costs. And we still have a net cost of somewhere around $227. Per acre just for converting to that switchgrass. So we have a cost associated with that. Now if we estimate that material, let's say we estimate 6 tons per acre that we're going to produce, we have an average value of that material at $60 per ton, we can then calculate our profit, and our profit's going to be somewhere around $132 per acre. And we compare that to our corn total of $157 or our grain total of $71, we can see that the net profit with the switchgrass, if we're able to sell it for about $60 per ton is going to be very similar to what our net profit is with the grain. Okay, so it's almost as if we can think about this in the sense that both of these products are very, very profitable if we can sell the products, okay, if we have market for the products. And that's going to be a critical part of this whole thing. Do I have reliable markets for these products? But they're both going to be very relatively profitable. The reason why we included the nitrogen into this question, as opposed to a lot of studies which have really said we're able to produce switch grass without, or we're able to produce natural grasses without nitrogen, is that when we look at the yield response functions for switch grass, or we look at the yield response functions for other grasses, we can see when we compare our nitrogen rate versus our biomass yields, and this is some data that came out of Texas, it's not our data, we can see that there's a very nice response to nitrogen fertilizer. When I look here, this is what my yield is if I would not put any fertilizer on. We would get somewhere around 1,000 kilograms per hectare per year. If I put out there 200 pounds or 200 kilograms, I'm going to increase that up to almost 12,000 kilograms per hectare. And so we have a very strong relationship between our nitrogen and our productivity of this particular switchgrass. And many of our native grasses follow similar sorts of curves. What Greg then did is he said, well, let's go through this and we're going to look at, well, what would be my recommendation for the nitrogen fertilizer if I make some different some guesses. So let's say that my fertilizer was selling for $40 a pound or 40 cents a pound, and we're able to sell this switchgrass for between $40 and $100 a ton. Well, when we do these calculations and determine the economic optimum end rate, and what he did then is he said that's the point that the input in the yield is equal to the change, the input in the nitrogen, we would then calculate what our economic end rates are. And what we looked at is we saw that our economic end rates ranged from about 130 pounds per acre all the way up to 415 pounds per acre. So we had a wide range in our economic end rates for the switchgrass. What this told us is assumptions that people aren't going to be fertilizing their switchgrass are probably not correct. Okay, our farmers know this, and if they can get the benefit from this, they will probably be fertilizing these materials. And so estimates of nitrogen budgets or energy budgets without assuming fertilizer being applied to grasses are probably not very accurate. The other part of the question that our farmers are constantly asking us is not just, am I going to make money on this, but what's the value of this material if I would use it for something other than biofuels? Because our value as a biofuel is we have alternative uses for these things. I can say, well, let's just feed this to my cattle, or let's use it for bedding or whatever. I have a choice for that. Let's put this back in the land for a carbon source. I have a choice for that. But these materials also contain nutrients that when we return them, we pull them off of the field, supposedly need to be replaced in the way of additional fertilizer. So we need to consider that in our calculations. And so when I look at our different materials, and we've got here mature alfalfa, we've got some distiller's grain, we've got hay, and we've got corn stover, we can then calculate based on the dry matter content or in the crude protein contents what are the actual values of these materials. And this is a spreadsheet that Greg's put together. When we start looking at this relative to feeding materials that we would normally buy as supplements, he would say is mature alfalfa is worth at least $70 per ton. He would say distiller's grain, is it worth at least $125 per ton? Grass hay is worth at least $50 per ton. And he would say that corn stover as a feed is worth at least $35 per ton. So we can look at these materials and we can assign values to these based on what they actually contain. We can also look at them and say, well, what happens if I remove these materials? What's the value of that in the way of fertilizer that I've removed? And so Greg has gone through and he says, when I remove a ton of corn stover, I'm removing $8 of nitrogen fertilizer, a couple dollars of phosphorus, and $6 of potassium. And so we need to consider that in our calculations as well. And so he's saying that value is somewhere between $15 and $16 per per ton. The other part of the question that we need to think about, that our farmers are interested in, many of them have made investments in South Dakota, is they're the early investors in a lot of our ethanol plants. And so they've made these investments in these ethanol plants, and the question that they have is, should I build another ethanol plant for additional, to process additional grain, or should I stay where I'm at? And so what Greg's done is he's gone through this question, and he's saying, well, we need to look at that question in four different parts. The first part is energy to process the corn into ethanol, our manufacturing cost, our plant capital cost, and our grain versus cellulose cost of the ethanol plants. So when we think about converting corn grain or whatever into ethanol, the first thing that we need to realize is that there's energy involved in this initial process, and it takes generally somewhere between 25,000 and 40,000 BTUs per gallon of ethanol of input energy just to get the process started. So we need to think about this. Now, this energy here we can derive from several different processes. We can either get it from coal, or we can get it from natural gas, but we can get it from a couple different places. The energy that it takes to convert this energy here depends on the types of process for the distiller's grain. If I use natural gas, my cost per million BTUs is around between $5 and $14. And if I use coal, and if I estimate a cost of $40 per ton, my cost for the coal is around $2.27 per million BTUs. And so when we start looking at our costs of our systems, just the decision, not as an energy question, but just as a decision, what source of energy do I use for this plant is going to make a huge difference on the profitability of the system. If I choose to use natural gas, or if I choose to use coal, we're going to get different sorts of answers. It's interesting here, one of the notes here that Greg put on his handout on this presentation is that gasoline at $2.50 a gallon costs $20 per million BTU. So in effect, what you could almost be thinking about this in a sense is I'm taking coal here at $2.27 per million BTUs and converting it into gasoline at $20 per million BTUs. So when we start estimating what these actual costs are, we can look at, well, if I have coal at $2 per million BTUs, and if I require 25,000 BTUs per gallon to get the process started, we can estimate our initial costs at 5 cents. If I estimate my energy costs at $6 per million BTUs, and it takes me 40,000 BTUs per gallon, my energy costs are going to be 24 cents, and for $14 per million BTUs, it's going to be 56 cents. Manufacturing costs, they're going to range somewhere between 20 and 35 cents per gallon. We do have some input in that, and that's going to deal with labor management and a variety of other day-to-day decisions. We also have our capital costs. In our capital costs, we need to be thinking in the sense of a 40 million gallon plant cost somewhere between $40 million and $80 million. And so we have this cost here. Now, oftentimes we don't have to borrow the entire amount. Oftentimes you're going to have people that invest somewhere around half of that. So if we assume that half the money is invested, then we don't need to pay interest rates on that invested money. And if we assume a 5% depreciation life with a building life of 40 years and a machinery life of 10 years, we can then calculate down here our investment costs, our capital costs. So when we look at this would be for grain. We can now calculate our estimated cost for our energy, our manufacturing costs, our corn costs, our capital costs, for a total cost for producing a gallon of ethanol to the plant of about $1.34. And this assumes that our cost of the corn is around $3 per bushel. Okay, so we can estimate this if we're, if we can estimate, we can calculate this. Now, if we look at cellulose, our cellulose numbers are going to be a little bit different. Now, our theoretical yield for cellulose productivity is between 110 and 130 gallons per ton. Logen is estimating that they'll be able to produce 70 gallons per ton. And if they produce 70 gallons per ton, what that means, it's going to take about 28 pounds of stover per gallon of ethanol. So if 28 gallons of stover will produce 1 gallon of ethanol. We can go through the same calculations that we just went through. We can calculate our energy costs, manufacturing costs, our stover costs, capital costs, for a total cost of approximately $1.66 per gallon of ethanol. These are all hypothetical because there's no commercial plant in the United States that is actually doing this at this point. So when we compare our costs for our cellulose versus our costs for our grain, we can see right off the top is that our grain is a little bit lower than the cellulose. And the primary difference why this grain cost here is actually lower than it is for the cellulose is because we don't have secondary products for the byproducts of the cellulose materials. For the grain materials, we have distiller's grains, which is very, very high value materials, which actually reduce our costs a little bit. So one of the things that we're going to need to do, if I was an investor, is we need to figure out ways of reducing this, and the primary way of reducing that is to find secondary products for those cellulosic materials. So in summary, one of the things that our farmers are very interested in, they're very pleased about, is that at $3 per bushel, corn is very profitable. Harvesting corn stalks will likely make it more profitable. They are very concerned about how much corn stalks they can actually harvest, and that's some of the research that we need to complete. Grass and switchgrass production can also be profitable when we punch through the numbers. So this isn't just something that we need to be thinking in the sense that it's either corn or switchgrass. We're really thinking in the sense that it's corn and switchgrass and prairie bundle grasses or whatever across our landscapes so that we can maximize our productivity. The key isn't that I'm a corn producer and I want to produce corn. The key is I want to maximize my profitability. And the way that I'm going to maximize my profitability is I'm going to put the plants in areas in the landscape that they're most efficient. All these plants have specific areas that they're most that they could be most productive at. Farmers know how to produce corn, and they feel very comfortable with it. The thing that corn has going for it, they can do it. There's ready markets for it. And if the ethanol industry goes to pot, they still got ready markets for their corn. They can do that. Evidence of that is that in South Dakota, we did a survey this last spring. In that survey, we asked 130, 140 farmers what are they likely to do with their CRP lands. One of the responses is, we're 50% of the current CRP lands that's coming up for renewal. Basically, they said, we're going to put that into crop production. But it wasn't that they're terribly interested in just putting it into corn. About half of it was going to go into corn. About half of that was going to go in row crops, either wheat or corn. The other half was going to go into pasture lands. Okay, so they understood the relationship, and they understood the importance of the pasture and the livestock and all that stuff. And they were going to take advantage of that. Okay, and they were going to take advantage of it. But the take-home message is the CRP land are likely to reduce in the near future. 50% of our farmers identified that they would probably not renew their lands in the CRP. Okay. We need to be careful, and we need to keep our eye on our production costs as well as our ethanol costs. One of the Noel, was it you were talking about the nitrogen question? Or maybe Alan, maybe you talked about the nitrogen question. This last year, we produced 200 bushel corn on 100 pounds of nitrogen. Okay, our economic optimum end rate was 100 pounds of nitrogen. Our yields that we measured with that were 200 bushels. And we've been doing that in those same plots for the last 3 years, and that's in a corn-soybean rotation. But the thought that we need a pound of nitrogen per bushel of corn is probably not a valid assumption anymore. we were producing 200 bushels at about 50 cent, about half a pound of nitrogen. And so some of the questions that we've been dealing with and some of the points, the assumptions that we've made on our fertilizer response functions may not be accurate in the future. I really do think our new corn varieties are much more nitrogen efficient than the old ones. And they grow very, very, they're just incredibly productive, incredibly productive. Okay, I guess that's where I'm at. And I'd be yes.
A couple of 3 points. I noticed that on your corn stover issue, you were talking about taking 6 ton of stover off. I would say that standing up a little bit for wind erosion and water erosion, we need to be very careful about how much stover we take off the land.
Well, actually, what we actually estimated is we were estimating taking off 2.85 tons for the stover, but 6 tons for the switchgrass.
Okay. That's going to be a hard thing. CRP lands, when they come out, let's be advocating a strip system with grass left in the middle if we're going back to corn or something. That would further reduce the need to keep the stover in, that kind of stuff. I guess this is all worrying us guys that work in conservation most of our lives a little bit.
It worries a lot of us. It's not just, it worries a lot of people at the university as well. It's just a critical issue of how do we, on a water quality aspect, we'd be going back 10, 15 years of where we were ages ago. If we don't do it right, we're not going to be where we need to be.
I think some of our producers would mine soil too if they got a chance to do that.
That's right.